Good afternoon. It's Monday, the 20th of February 2017, just after 1 o'clock. Welcome to UK Column News. I'm your host, Brian Gerrish, with me in studio, Mike Robinson. It's grey and chilly in Plymouth. We're going to leave the weather there. Much more important things going on in a military sense and a political sense.
Indeed, because Theresa May, as we know, has been talking about hashtag global Britain. This is the new policy. We're going to be truly global.
For the rules-based order.
For the rules-based international order, and nowhere more so than with defence. So we are now promoting our international engagement. Britain's diplomatic and military strength abroad is going to help enhance UK security and prosperity. And that's according to both the defence and foreign secretaries. So this is great news. They've launched what they're describing as an ambitious framework, which is going to increase cooperation with partners across the globe and keep Britain safe. So this is a strategic, this is as a result of or building upon work from the Strategic Defence and Security Review 2015. And of course, this is all about Britain's defence policy becoming more international by design. So they're saying that defence engagement helps build robust relationships on which our influence, prosperity and security depend. Our commitment to international defence engagement includes establishing three new regional defence British defence staffs for defence engagement in the Gulf, Asia Pacific and West Africa, new defence sections in Albania, Finland, new attaché posts in Latvia, Lithuania, Georgia, Qatar, Japan, Pakistan and Afghanistan, new defence section covering Senegal, the Gambia, Mali and Niger, increased military exercises with NATO partners, including in the Ukraine, Poland and Estonia. They're going to lead development of the Joint Expeditionary Force with Denmark, Estonia, Latvia, Lithuania, the Netherlands and Norway, exercising and training with partners in the five-power defence arrangements, such as Exercise Eastern Venture. So what did Michael Fallon have to say about this? He said, our increased ambition for defence engagement abroad demonstrates the UK's global role. He said whether it's by increasing our military expenditure in the Middle East, training Nigerian forces in maritime security, or RAF Typhoons exercising over South Korea, Britain is committed to working internationally to protect our people and interests. And Boris had to get his oar in as well. He said this is about sending a clear signal of the UK's intent as a dynamic, agile, cutting-edge global power. So, Brian, this is about Britain sticking its nose into everyone's business. We are going to train the military globally.
We're going to train the military globally. We have a military at home which is literally falling apart. And I know this is a very hard thing to say. I know there'll be many ex-military, former military people watching the UK column today. I am certainly not undermining all of the hard work by the men and women in the military, but the facts are at the moment that our military forces at home have been decimated. We don't have working aircraft carriers. We don't have the aircraft to put on them. We know that the nuclear submarine fleet is in an appalling state. We haven't got enough aircraft in the Royal Air Force. We've got a tiny army which is not capable of doing any major operations abroad, and yet suddenly we are training everybody in the world
to die for us,
to die for us, or to die for the City of London, I think is probably where it comes down to, Mike. But this is just astonishing that UK, that can't run its own country, we've only got to look out the window as everything around us is falling apart, and yet suddenly Michael Fallon, I'm not sure what his expertise is, health centres, health clubs, I think it is, or something like that, gyms. He's on a world stage saying that we're going to get our noses into every other military force to what might control them.
Yes.
for our best interest. So we haven't got the armed forces ourselves. We're going to get into those other countries with soft power. We're going to train. That means get into the command and control structure and take over these organisations. This is very, very dangerous business. And in a few minutes, I'll be showing some of the stuff that European Union's up to.
Well, speaking of which, of course, we must not forget that European Union military integration is right at the heart of this policy. And so Michael Fallon was speaking at the Munich Security Conference at the weekend. And he said, while Britain is leaving the European Union, he said with a straight face, the UK will not be stepping back from its role in European security. He said, Britain is committed to Europe's security and we're stepping up our engagement internationally. But it was this comment from the weekend at the Munich Security Conference which really grabbed my attention. He said this to the German newspaper Deutsche Welle. We are leaving the political European Union, but we're not leaving the continent. Europe remains our continent. We're going to go on contributing to the security of our continent. Is he on drugs?
Or incontinent, one of the two. But this man, very, very dangerous, because, of course, he was heavily involved in the European movement in his early days. So he's absolutely pro-European. And what we've got here is the lie of Brexit. This is the PSYOP, as you've called it, however long ago that was, but that was quite correct. So this is a total lie. Brexit is a lie. What have we got going on at speed? European military integration.
So also going on today is continuing visits from US statesmen with the European Union. I've called this the US-EU love-in. This was Mike Pence, the vice president, visiting and meeting various people within the EU foreign or the EU establishment. We've got Federica Mogherini. He also met, as on screen here, Donald Tusk, the European Council president. He's going to be meeting the other European president, Jean-Claude Juncker, in a today as well. And also Jens Stoltenberg, the NATO General Secretary. So he said it was really great. The United States is and always will be the EU's greatest ally. President Trump and our people are truly devoted to our transatlantic union. The EU Council President Tusk met him this morning, as I say. He said that reports of the death of the West have been greatly exaggerated. Of course, that was the theme of the one of the themes of the Munich Security Conference. He said that there's room to improve the transatlantic military cooperation. He said that NATO is not obsolete, however, and he said that Mike Pence had agreed with him that the US and the EU needed to improve security measures, and so it went on. Pence himself really positive about the European Union, what a fantastic organization it is, what a fantastic institution it is, that the US and the EU share common values, that they're committed to goals, that they have to be strong and united in confronting the threats to Europe, and so on. So it really was a bit of a love-in, Brian.
Yeah, it was. And the EU, according to him, had just started as a sort of trading vehicle. He didn't mention Alan Dulles and some of those early meetings when American money was pouring in, of course, to help create the European super state vehicle, supranational state. This was all just careful little snippets. It was just a trading organization that got bigger and better. Spin. Well, let's have a look behind the scenes. Now, we had some really astonishing information which came in on Friday, and it is around the gentleman top left in your screen, Dr. Charles Tannock. This is a Tory MEP. And he's suddenly released a paper, which is astonishing. Now, what I've got on screen is part of a tweet that I put up alerting people about this. But in the centre one, where he's having what appears to be a love-in with Ms. Mogherini, what it says is it's talking about the common security. This is the common security and defence policy for Europe. It's facing a challenge set up after the Amsterdam Treaty in 2001. The Political and Security Committee is the main body for transmitting EU member state foreign policy decisions to EU institutions and receives input from the, quote, European Union military. So above Mogherini's head there is the first statement where they are absolutely admitting to an integrated European defence military. And we've just seen from Fallon that UK is absolutely part of that. And then on the right-hand side of the screen, this is astonishing. Officials mention the war in Ukraine as being a game changer for European policy in that the EU was for the first time seen as a leading actor. So here we've got the EU crowing that the war in Ukraine was helpful to EU policy. And I think this fully supports our assertions that the EU was itself working on the ground to help stir up that violence. And why did the EU want it? Because it helped the EU be seen as a game changer and EU to be seen as a leading, quote, actor. But if we go down to the bottom, it says if NATO does weaken under the Trump administration, either through deliberate US policy or by passive neglect, or if the European nightmare of a Putin-Trump understanding does materialize, then the common sense and defense common security and defense policy will become even more significant. So there is the European Union crowing over the fact that it's helped create a war in Ukraine. Why did Europe want that war in Ukraine? Because it bigged up the European Union itself. And then we have a Tory MEP crowing that Europe, the European nightmare, is for there to be some sort of rapprochement, some sort of peace agreement between Trump and Putin. This is unbelievably dangerous stuff. We've got the European Union showing its hand, prepared to create wars and violence in order to further the rise of the EU supranational state. I don't know how clear it's got to get, Mike, but no. This document, which we're going to look into in more detail, spells it all out. It's on a plate. This is dangerous, dangerous stuff.
Okay, so Donald Trump then. The British Parliament is going to have a debate this afternoon as a result of the two e-petitions. Of course, the two e-petitions, one saying that Trump should not be allowed to make a state visit to the United Kingdom. So that one said Donald Trump should not be allowed to enter the UK in his capacity as head of US government. And he should not be invited. Sorry, he should not be invited to make an official state visit because it would cause embarrassment to Her Majesty the Queen. The other one said that Donald Trump should be allowed to make a state visit. Well, the government responded by saying that they believe that the President of the United States should be extended the full courtesy of a state visit, and that therefore they disagree with the first petition. Well, there's going to be a debate about that in Westminster Hall today, the 20th of February at 4:30 p.m. It is going to be live streamed on the parliamentlive.tv website if anybody is in the slightest bit interested in listening to these people discuss this issue. But the government has made its position clear, and I don't think the debate is going to produce any alternative result.
Yeah. What a state of affairs, though.
Indeed.
Okay, well, let's turn our attention to this, which is Sunday's Mail on Sunday. The headline is about Ted Heath being a paedophile, but we're going to start by delving inside the paper to this particular article, which is all about nuclear safety. Revealed UK's nuclear alert. Safety watchdog makes a mockery of the mod's claim of just 27 incidents, 14 serious accidents, 22 incidents. On and on it goes with a picture of a Trident missile firing on the right-hand side, and it says that wonky Trident missile and the colliding subs. Now, this article is a massive attack on the defence nuclear industry, and we're going to say that some of this may well be justified, but what we're interested in here is the accuracy of press reporting. We're interested in fake news. So here's the article, and let's have a look at part of it on screen, and I'll just highlight this bit here. It starts off, a chilling catalogue of more than 100 accidents involving Britain's nuclear weapons reveals for the first time how often we may have come close to disaster. The shock report by an independent nuclear watchdog documents 110 major alerts, four times higher than the Ministry of Defence has acknowledged. Among the incidents in the dossier by the Nuclear Information Service. So there we are. It says that this independent organisation, the Nuclear Information Service, has produced all of this information. Well, let's bring in the man. This is the man who wrote it, Mark Nicol. I noticed that all defence correspondents now might have to have a child on their lap, male or female. This is presumably to get over the cuddly image. Mm. But we'll leave that aside. So here he is, Mark Nicol, defence correspondent, The Mail on Sunday, author, Ultimate Risk, Last Round, Condor Blues in Iraq tribute, triathlete, husband, dad. So that's the man. And what did he have to say? Well, he said it was the independent nuclear information service. But if we go to the Nuclear Information Service, we find it says this: NIS is a not-for-profit independent information service which works to promote public awareness and, quote, foster debate on nuclear disarmament. So this is a nuclear disarmament site. Its objective is to get the public debating the need for nuclear disarmament.
Are we allowed to say it's a campaign?
It's a campaign. But we did phone up NIS this morning and simply asked them if they were aware that they were being misrepresented in this Mail on Sunday article. And my goodness, did they get prickly, I think is the word. They said to the UK column that they're definitely not a campaigning organisation. They acknowledge that they're pushing for nuclear disarmament, but they're only an information service. So campaigning apparently is sort of, if you get out with banners on the ground, you can produce what we might assume to be skewed information, but that's not campaigning.
It's not campaigning to public, to push information into the media?
Not according to these people, no.
Right.
But they were very reluctant to speak to me. They didn't come back to me before we've gone live. So I'd encourage people to go and have a look at them. And how independent are they? Well, of course, they are funded by the usual great and good Roundtree, being one of them that I pointed out was heavily politically involved in its funding streams all over the place. So let's carry on with the theme now that we've got under the surface of that Mail report. Here's Nuclear Information Service, and it has called for Britain's defence nuclear programme to be placed under the responsibility of the Office for Nuclear Regulation. Now, this is where it gets interesting, Mike, because we're taking away military control of nuclear weapons and we're pushing it towards civilian control. We'll have a discussion on why that'll be in a moment. But let's have a look at the Office for Nuclear Regulation. And I went to their website and the first lady who came up was their chief executive. What experience do you think this lady has, Mike? Nuclear industry, do you think?
You would have thought so.
Well, you would have thought so, but she doesn't. She's previously worked for the big lottery. She's worked for Hull City Council. She's worked with disabled people. And now she's hopped across and she's running an organisation which is not only nuclear regulation, but NIS is pushing for her and her colleagues to monitor military.
So at the moment, they are regulating the
correct
energy generation through nuclear power.
Yeah.
But we are now going to hand over weapons to them as well.
Well, I think this is what the undertone of that Mail article is about. Very devious stuff. Now, to be fair to the Office of Nuclear Regulation, they say, well, of course, she doesn't run the show. We have our own experts. So we've got the doctor here at Centre Screen, who is fully qualified in nuclear matters.
That's Dr. Richard Savage.
Thank you for that. And we've got this gentleman here.
David Senior.
And he gets interesting because, of course, if you look at his CV, he's been working closely with European nuclear matters. So if we follow the logic through, we have a massive article from the Mail. It starts out with a lie because it says the information they've used for the article is independent. Clearly it's not. It's come from what we would say is a campaign group. And now we're spinning that the nuclear weapons should be passed to a civilian organisation which just happens to have those European connections.
Because there's so many safety issues with it being in the hands of the military, is that
well,
it?
Well, all of a sudden, the military is becoming competent. The military can't run submarines. The military can't run aircraft carriers. The military can't do a number of things, which it did. This is very similar, Mike, to the NHS. NHS might not have been perfect, but we did have working medical facilities. Now we've got chaos. So organizations destroyed from the inside. I can't say that this lady, the chief executive, Adrienne Kelby, is common purpose, but all of her language is very much of a common purpose nature. And if we have a look at some of the things that she's interested in, she's been re-promoting this little bit, a lady called Rebecca Thorrington from the Nuclear Industry Association, who's boasting that she's been to Romania to learn about the Romanian nuclear industry and its cultural history. That's all paid for by the Nuclear Industry Association. So we can't even run our nuclear facilities in UK. We've got to get people into Europe learning from the Romanians. And then this is another comment which gives you an idea of what goes on in this lady's head. There's no hero coming. We need to drive the change ourselves. Adrienne Kelby, CEO at the Office for Nuclear Organization for Nuclear Regulation. So what change?
At least you say she's a change agent.
She's a change agent. And what change is she talking about? Now, if you're getting interested in what we are seeing, which we think starts with manipulation of the public mind by the Mail on Sunday, then let's get back into this article and have a look at this bit, because there's an embedded part to the article which is starring Prince Andrew there. And it's talking about nuclear weapons on board ships. Let's see whether we... Oh, sorry. There it is, highlighted for you. And the Mail says the Royal Navy mistakenly took nuclear weapons to the Falklands War. Now, that's quite a statement, isn't it, Mike? Mistaken. We made a bit of a mistake. We didn't realise that we had these nuclear weapons on board. A little bit of a mistake. Well, when we spoke to the Office for New... I beg your pardon, that should be, I've got Office for Nuclear Regulation there. I've got to correct myself because we're back on NIS, stated to the UK column that the movement of these nuclear weapons was an operational decision. So we've now got a mismatch between the nuclear information data that was coming into the Mail and what they actually said they told the Mail.
So where did the fakery come in?
We don't know. But what I can say is it's pretty hard to believe that the military would have forgotten about some nuclear weapons on board ship. This is simply not possible. So the spin in this instance seems to have been put in by the Mail on Sunday. Mm. So we did phone the Mail on Sunday. They don't work on a Monday, but I'm told somebody should be in tomorrow. And hopefully they're going to be able to explain how this mix-up worked. But what we say is going on here is this is preparing the public for the fact that British nuclear weapons are already being moved over towards control by the French, and ultimately they are going to be passed to European control, and Germany will be the ultimate power in control of those weapons.
Well, let's... come back onto the nuclear security conference. The Munich Security Conference, which is taking place over the weekend. A couple of things to highlight. Alex Thompson pointing out that Lindsey Graham, who was speaking there, had said that 2017 is going to be the year of kicking the Russians in the ass. So that's a nice sentiment from a so-called statesman. But Bill Gates was there, and he was telling everybody that the next epidemic... health epidemic could originate on the computer screen of a terrorist intent on using genetic engineering to create a synthetic version of the smallpox virus. So the question in my mind was this Bill Gates pushing his vaccine program and using the threat of synthetic viruses created by some indeterminate terrorists with computers? Is that what he was up to there, or was it just generally creating a new fear program?
Seeding, isn't it? It's seeding the news sphere with whatever his personal agenda. Who is this man?
Well, exactly. So he also said getting ready for a global pandemic is every bit as important as nuclear deterrence and avoiding a climate catastrophe. Innovation, cooperation and careful planning can dramatically mitigate the risks presented by each of these threats. And he said that we are quite likely to face such an outbreak within the next 10, 15 years. So you kind of see a parallel here. We've got the BBC going into countries, fomenting warfare and violence, and then going in back in later on to report on that. We've got the European Union allegedly going into Ukraine, creating regime change there, and using that as an excuse for EU military integration. And here we've got Bill Gates telling us that it's very likely we're going to face a global synthetic viral pandemic, some form of bioterrorism that's going to kill 30 million people in less than a year, within the next 10 to 15 years.
Where's the evidence?
Well, there isn't any, but undoubtedly he's going to be there to provide the vaccine for that. So
We can tell our audience today that we were smiling as we compiled the news today, because more and more of it is taking us into what we said we described as la-la land.
Yes.
It's becoming very difficult to keep a straight face because we're watching complete mayhem and nonsense unfold.
And as we've already mentioned, Michael Fallon was at the Munich Security Conference as well. He was talking about Afghanistan, because apparently we're going to have to send more British troops back to Afghanistan to avoid the collapse of the country. He said if it was right to go in, it has to be right not to leave before the job is done, as well as we can do it. If Afghanistan collapses, we here will feel the consequences very directly. If Afghanistan collapses, there could be 3 to 4 million young Afghan men sent out by their villages to migrate westwards, and they're heading here. They're heading to Germany or Britain, and that could be the consequence if this entire country collapses. Well, there you go. We're going to send troops back, because we're training troops in Afghanistan at the moment, but we've got to do more of that.
But we don't have a lot of troops.
No, indeed. Indeed. Right. What else is going on? Well, fake news. This is not a story, but not a fake story, but this is the Italian Senate. A number of news outlets reporting this. On screen at the moment is Adele Gambaro, who is an Italian senator. And she has put forward a cross-party bill, which is there to deal with fake news or hoaxes. There have always been fake news or hoaxes, it says, but they've never been spread at the rate we see today. Because of this, it's no longer possible to put off the debate. And so what they're proposing is that fake news reporting would generate a fine of €5,000, and hate campaigns against individuals, or anything which is aimed at undermining the democratic process, would result in a €10,000 penalty, fine. Anything that would create alarm to the public or damage the public interest could be punishable by up to 1 year in jail. So this has been entered into the books. Here it is, Senate Act number 2688. Of course, what it says in this document is that if you're a normal, a mainstream media outlet, Brian, the press, newspaper, TV, you would be exempt from this legislation.
Oh, that's handy, because they always tell the truth.
Well, indeed they do. There's no fake news ever put out by the mainstream media, so there's no need for them to fall under this legislation. Not that, you know, a €5,000 fine would make any difference to them anyway. This is clearly designed to attack small internet-based news outlets.
Because they're so dangerous.
Yes, but this would be a dangerous precedent.
Yeah. Okay, well, let's come back to the Mail on Sunday, and let's have a look at that front page. Here it is. Police Chief Heath was a paedophile. Astonishing claim. Ex-PM is guilty of vile crimes that were covered up by the establishment. The police chief investigating claims that Sir Edward Heath was a paedophile is convinced the allegations are 120% genuine, the Mail on Sunday can reveal. It says more than 30 people have come forward with claims of sexual abuse, and they've come forward from different places. They don't know each other. Well, meet the journalist. This is the man, Simon Walters, and he's had awards for the quality of his journalism. Here's the main meat of the article. And let's note the big headline. Is he guilty? Yes, I'm 120% sure. That's the stunning verdict of Wiltshire Chief Constable. Now, the interesting thing about this is the reports that UK Column have had are that that chief constable has absolutely stood his ground in continuing to investigate, and they have been stunned at the number of people who've come forward, people who don't know each other. They come from different areas now, but they're all telling the same story. Now, it gets interesting if we get into the body of it. Remember that headline? The chief constable is saying he's 120% sure. Now, what the article actually says is a source says that Mr. Veal, the chief constable, believes in them 120% and believes them totally convincing. So it's not the chief constable that's saying this, it's a source. And then when we get here, what do we find right at the end of the article? Further asked, that's the police spokesman, further asked if Mr. Veal had 120% faith in the allegation, the spokesman declined to comment. So what we can't find in the article is anything to support the headline that the police chief said he was 120% sure. Now, if you're curious to know what might be going on here, what I think is going on is that the Mail on Sunday is lining that police chief up for a big fall. So we're overcooking it, but we can read some of the language, astonishing claims. They can't possibly be true because they're astonishing.
Well, isn't the hint in the sub-headline? Because it says, is he guilty? Yes, I'm 100% sure. That's 120% sure. That's definitive. But then the sub-headlining says, that's a stunning verdict of Wiltshire Chief Constable reigniting witch hunt row.
Absolutely.
Right.
So this article is very carefully crafted. And then, of course, what is your eye pulled to on this side of that double page spread? Police refuse to call off the dogs after VIP child sex ring fiasco. So we're now starting to gently undermine it all. And there's a further embedded headline, a little bit difficult to see, bottom right-hand corner of your screen. And that says, Heath accuser is a satanic sex fantasist. So the article on the right-hand side of the page is all starting to undermine that there could possibly be anything of this sort going on.
So actually, if you read those two pages, you're left in
cognitive
dissonance.
Dissonance, absolutely. It's very, very interesting stuff. The bottom, the right-hand article, which is in a slightly yellowy colour in the paper, ends by saying this: Times writer and ex-Tory MP Matthew Paris dismissed the allegation, saying, "If Heath was a child abuser, I'm an aardvark." So I think there's some very, very dirty journalism going on here by the Mail on Sunday, but we've got it going on with the paedophile story. Can't possibly be any paedophiles in government, and we've got it to do with the military and nuclear weapons. Mm. Total spin. So we'd like to just say, of course, no way there can possibly have been any paedophiles in Parliament, certainly none in the Lib Dem party, because Nick Clegg, who was one of Leon Britton's European political boys, has said that we don't have sexual abuse in the Lib Dem party.
And of course, there are no Labour Party MPs ever campaigned for the right to take sexual images of children.
Well, there were a couple.
Ah, okay. What can we say? Right, what's next?
This should take it through to the government,
yes.
Which can't find the paedophiles, is now going to help us to parent.
Indeed, because, we know what's been going on in Scotland with the named person scheme, but helping parents to parent, this is a new report from the Social Mobility Commission, and the government saying that this research brings together evidence on parenting behaviours and the extent to which public policy can support parents. Public policy can have an impact on parenting behaviour and achieve positive outcomes for children, but there is currently a lack of evidence on what works, and this is according to this research by the Public Mobility Commission. They're saying that figures show that in the last decade, more than 2.5 million children in England, including over 580,000 children known to be eligible for free school meals, had not reached the government's definition of a good level of development by the age of five. By the time students receive their GCSE results, around 32% of the variation in performance can be predicted based on indicators observed at or before the age of five. So what they're absolutely saying is that what needs to happen, Brian, is these children aren't being developed properly between the age of one and five. We've got to go in there. But of course, between the ages of sort of zero and five, this is the time that children are being vaccinated. And increasingly, well, some people would say that some children respond to the vaccines that they're getting these days by perhaps ending up on the autism spectrum. Yep. But some people would also say that no child is actually getting away scot-free, and that perhaps we're seeing a few points knocked off intelligence IQ scores as a result of this. This isn't proven, but certainly there should be research done on this. But that research was certainly not part of this report, this Social Mobility Commission report. This issue was not even looked at. So instead, what are they looking at? It's all about parenting style, and it's all psychological stuff. So we're going in and we're going to be teaching parents how to parent, and never mind what medical issues there may have been.
Absolutely, Mike. But of course, the moment the social services get alongside the parents, there's a grave risk those children are going to be taken away from their parents. Just commenting on problems with children, we were told 2 or 3 years ago that some of the primary schools in South Wales had over 50% of the children had special needs, and the teachers were warned that they must not talk about that subject. So this is the reality of it. But of course, when you have the film Vaxxed coming up, where there is considerable evidence to say that vaccinations can present a danger, and there should be further investigation into the safety of vaccinations, then the government, of course, is absolutely turning on the originator of the report. And the other thing I will say is that we know from local reports in the southwest that where parents are perhaps in dire straits, they're starting to use food banks. The food banks staff are reporting the parents to social services, and then social services are coming in alongside the families on the basis that those children are suffering at the hands of the parents. So very, very dangerous state intervention. And of course, many people in England and Wales still don't understand what the SNP tried to get in place with the named person scheme in Scotland, whereas one Scottish a member of the Scottish Parliament said, don't worry, parents will, quote, also have a role in bringing up their children.
Also. Well, just before we finish on this, of course, it wasn't actually the Social Mobility Commission, it's their report. But the underlying research was done by an organisation called Family, Kids and Youth. And this is, they describe themselves as one of the best known young people and children's research agencies. So this is about market research. We work for some of the leading names in child, youth and family markets. And again, this language of, you know, the word market in the context of children and families, I find pretty disturbing.
Well, and we have, of course, a child-based charity, which is itself called Core Assets, which I find pretty objectionable as well. So a market in children, that's the way it seems to be, or at least profit from children is what we start to see happening in UK. And we would say it's on a scale which is truly breathtaking.
Well, we did say it was going to happen. But we're going to end with this one. UKIP officials resign over leader Paul Nuttall's false claim that he lost close friends at Hillsborough. So here's Paul Nuttall standing in a by-election and just 3 days to go before that. And, well, he seems to be in hiding at the moment. His own website has said that for the last week or so. Site is offline for maintenance. And this all comes down to the appearance of an article on his website, which last I heard he was suggesting he had not written and he didn't know how it got there. But this article appeared on his website and made a claim that he had friends who had died as a result of the Hillsborough disaster. And as a result, all the mainstream media today describing UKIP as being a party plunged into crisis. as party officials in his local area are starting to resign. And just at the just two or three days before they're going to a by-election where they had a pretty good chance.
We've seen this time after time, Mike, that any time a local area of UKIP started to put something together that was powerful, started to move forward, as they say, to make real gains in an electoral sense, all of a sudden infighting, pressure, rumours, the thing is collapsed. But of course, what is the government after at the moment? The government needs to destroy UKIP. Labour Party is in disarray as well. Excuse me. What are we left with? Tory dictatorship.
Indeed.
That's where we're going. I'm short of water. Excuse me. That helps a bit. Well, I would just say thank you very much to the team at Dartington that set up the conference at the weekend. It was extremely interesting to hear the very wide selection of views about what's going on at the moment and what we should be doing. We met some very nice people and it was very good to talk to you all. And we'll also say a big thank you to people who are supporting the UK column with subscriptions and donations. We've got to be quite forceful in this. If you like what we're doing, you want the UK column not only to continue but to grow, then we need your help with subscriptions and donations. It has to be paid for. We need your help to do that. Perhaps you consider coming on board if you're not already a subscriber. That's it for today. We will be back at the same time tomorrow. Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.